This is the Frogcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Frogcast. We are glad to be coming with you tonight to talk about the Frogs' big win over SMU. We're going to talk about some fallout in the Big 12 from conference games firing up for Oklahoma State and for Baylor, as well as the Aggies and the Hogs, West Virginia, BYU. Talk about a big coaching change that's already happened in LSU. And then lurking out there in less than a week, Oklahoma comes to town as the Frogs host the Sooners. That and so much more on this episode of the Frogcast. Well, guys, we all know that Friday night in Texas is for high school football. So when the Horned Frogs traveled to Dallas to take on SMU, thanks to the AAC ESPN TV contract, it did feel a little weird. It gave us an extra day to get ready for Oklahoma, but I don't know that our team was ready to go right out of the gate. We ended up winning convincingly, but this was another slow start. Trey, as we were sitting there texting each other in the first half of this game, what was going through your mind as you watched the Frogs and got frustrated?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the Friday night games. I just don't like it. And I did tweet, though, I really like Mac Brown as an analyst on TV. I don't know, like, he has a pulse on things, but he comes across kind of conversational. But I like him calling the games. But, yeah, the first half was brutal. It was not fun to watch. Like, I was, like, bored and frustrated, just like, this is really, like, because, like, on TV, which I know the atmosphere probably wasn't great at the game, but it was probably better than what it came across on TV, because it was just, seemed just bad, because, you know, everybody was late arriving because of traffic and all that, and then SMU only has, like, 12 fans anyways, and so that whole thing was just bad. The first half was just, and I don't understand why the Frogs are having these slow starts. I just don't get why they can start off so slow and then come out so hot in the second half. You would think, I don't know, you would think it would not be that bad, you know, to start off with, but it got better. Defense, you know, held them to 3 points, so that's positive. But yeah, that first half was just not fun to watch at all. There was nothing good about it at all.
Last week we talked about how we just weren't having any fun as fans. There was nothing that made you, like, get excited, get up off the couch, other than Turpin returning a punt, and now that's not going to happen the rest of the season. And that first half was kind of like a snapshot of everything that we'd experienced, minus, like, the last 9 minutes of the Arkansas game this entire season. Slow, low energy, inefficient. You know, why is this team kind of hanging around with us? But then something happened. And, you know, I don't know if they got lit up in the locker room. I don't know if John D'Arc getting lit up kind of excited them to finally, you know, get up off the bench and play. But that second half was something to see. And I saw some signs of life in the Frogs in that second half that made me feel good going forward. Daniel, I know you watched this game. Thinking of that second half where the Frogs just started to rip off points and the defense continued to shut them down, what are one or two things you saw that got you excited to be a Horned Frog fan, that you just had a good time enjoying watching?
Well, actually, first, I was there, and I can say that the atmosphere was a hell of a lot better than how it came across on TV. They didn't have it mic'd up worth a crap. I finally got to watch it just a couple hours ago on my DVR, and it was actually pretty darn good. A lot of TCU fans showed up late. Traffic was a bitch. Took me 2.5 hours to get there. And a lot of SMU fans showed up. I was blown away. There was just a sea of people. I mean, seriously, we joke online about how I've never seen a fan before, and I don't think I have, but now I've seen, you know, 10,000 or whatever it was. It was crazy. We'll start off the second half is just the very first play. D'Arce goes, you know, all the way. And I think Des White, but I'd seen him before, same with Hicks. But all of a sudden here comes John D'Arce just kind of exploding onto the scene in this game. And he's like my new favorite player. I love this guy. And he takes a big shot. And even Patterson said that he, you know, any other player probably wouldn't be able to get back out in that game, but he's such just a big dude that he could take that hit and, you know, go out and then, you know, not too much longer after that, catch that ball and run it in for a score. So that, I mean, that turned the momentum around big time. We were really depressed in that first half and frustrated, but kind of like how we had been all year. So pretty much John D'Arce kind of flipped it all around for everybody.
Yeah, the LSU transfer, John D'Arce, want to make sure I got that in. He has been a contributor right out of the gate. I felt good about his contribution. One of the things I've appreciated is the honesty that Patterson and D'Arce have had about the physical transition to go from basically a blocking wide receiver to a playing wide receiver in the spread, in terms of he had to get a little leaner, he had to get a little faster, he had to be able to make some changes physically, and I'm sure that comes psychologically with adjusting from one kind of offense to another. And he has found a way to do it and is clearly an early contributor. Somebody had joked online that he had more receiving yards than LSU has had passing yards this entire season. So that should tell you everything about the transition he had to make to wide receiver. One of the other things I was excited to see, and I wasn't there watching the game. I didn't get to sit in traffic for 2.5 hours. Kenny Hill, 31 of 45, 452 yards through the air, 8 drop passes that were right in the hands. I'm sure that was as frustrating for you as it was for me to watch. But even if you give him 4 more receptions out of those 8 drops, you're probably looking at well over 500 yards that Kenny Hill is flinging the ball all over the field with. I could not be higher on Kenny Hill. I knew he threw an interception. Trevon Boykin threw interceptions. Andy Dalton threw interceptions. I am so high on Kenny Hill, and his numbers are backing up the faith that I have in him. And I felt really good going into Oklahoma, seeing what Kenny Hill is able to do to just drive that ball down the field, use his arms, use his legs, and use his head to be able to be the leader of this football team. This is my little editorial comment. If you're online bitching about Kenny Hill not being our quarterback, I don't know what to tell you, because that guy is lighting it up. I feel good with him in the numbers that he's putting up. What do you guys think about Hill? I mean, I know I've kind of gone on a little rant here, but did you feel better about Kenny Hill at quarterback after this game?
Yeah, I guess so. No, he had a good game. Don't get me wrong. Great, you know, performance. It was SMU, though, so just to throw that in there. But, yeah, he was good. I don't know, man. Like, it's hard for me to feel the way that you feel about him. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say Foster Sawyer should be the starter for this team, because I don't think necessarily he would be better. And Hill has been good, but I don't know. It's hard for me to, like, trust him. I don't know. If he does, you know, plays well again this coming up week against Oklahoma, maybe you know, I'll start feeling a lot better about him and having more confidence. But, you know, I know everybody throws interceptions, but he's like thrown an interception in like seriously like 6 or 7 straight games now. And it's just like, you know, I get it. Everybody does it. I don't know. Not hating on him, but I just don't feel as confident as you do.
Well, I understand that, and I feel like I'm kind of on an island out here, and that's maybe why I advocate with such intensity for it. But I guess one of the things I would want to compare, and maybe this is more about our defense than our offense, but think about the SMU game last year. I mean, Trey, I mean, you and I remember, I mean, we damn near lost that game. There was a moment with about 7 minutes left that I thought, holy crap, we're going to lose to SMU. And this is a team that went on to lose to an FCS team. James Madison had 2 wins, you know, kind of a bottom feeder of the American Athletic Conference. And there's no doubt that SMU has improved, and this is a team that's going to be on the borderline bowl of probably one of the – it's probably the 6th best conference in the country. I feel good about our production. I feel good about Kenny Hill and being able to compare what we did against SMU last year. I know they didn't have Matt Davis, so don't tweet me that. I just feel good. I know it's SMU, but I feel confident in Hill, especially comparing to what we did against them last year. That's my warm take. It's not a hot take. One other thing I did want to add, Kyle Hicks is a stud. I think he's the best player on our team right now, and he's stepping up as the leader that we need him to be. I feel really good about Kyle Hicks in the backfield. I think he's going to have a strong season as he already has. And I think he's going to have a big game against Oklahoma because they seem to be pretty soft against the run. And I have a feeling Kyle Hicks is going to be able to put up some good numbers as he did the other night. He had 89 yards rushing on 14 attempts. I think we're going to see him break 100 yards against Oklahoma this Saturday.
Yeah, he's awesome, and I saw a note the other day. I mean, I know it's real early in the season, but he's, like, on pace to lead the Frogs, like, in rushing and receiving, and that would be a crazy feat if he's able to do that. But, yeah, I love watching him play, and I wish we'd feed him the rock more. And we were texting each other on Friday night when the Frogs were, you know, inside the five throwing the fade route, which they ended up scoring on. But it's like they have a really good running back. Just feed that fool the rock. Like, let's go. Like, he's very talented. And, yeah, he's on pace to have a great season.
Yeah, put the ball in his belly and let him run. Yeah, there's nothing as frustrating. The critiques of the spread are true. When you get inside the 5 and the 10, they don't always know what to do. We should be able to just hammer with Kyle Hicks when we get inside the goal or get inside the red zone, get inside the 5 and the 10. I agree with you. I think we got to see more Kyle Hicks, and I think what we see from him is going to continue to improve because that kid's a baller, for a lack of a better term.
But that's Daniel, also well. Go ahead, buddy. I was going to say that's also what we have Derek Green for, and then eventually Shewo, you know, the bigger backs. Although I haven't been all that impressed with Green, but he's a lot bigger guy. And last year, you know, we tried running Turpin. I think it was against Iowa State, and he got hit pretty hard, and he was, you know, kind of got his bell rung, and I was afraid. I was like, we're going to get this guy hurt. So I'm always afraid of that. So I don't want to use him as, you know, some bulldozer or something, but maybe outside the edge or something like that. But I agree, all that fading and stuff. It's like, really, do we need to do that from 5 yards away?
No, we don't. So hopefully Doug Meacham, when you're listening to this, put together your game plan, just listen to us. We got it figured out. But yeah, no more fades inside the 5. I don't want to see that anymore. I do not want to see that anymore. Well, we got that game behind us, which I think is how we often feel about the SMU game. There's nothing to gain and a lot to lose, and we got through it. We didn't get through it unharmed. Austin Schlottman got injured. There's myths of a broken ankle. He's going to be back, not for Oklahoma, but he's going to be back, and he's going to be fine. You know, it's just adding to the body count of people that are getting hurt. But we got through that game, and so we're going to be moving to Oklahoma, which we're going to talk about here in a minute. But there were a lot of other interesting things that happened in the Big 12 as well as around college football. A couple of things to note. I'm just going to hit these real quick. You guys, when I'm done, tell me if you got anything to add on it. Baylor. Baylor is undefeated. Baylor is ranked. Baylor looks good. Baylor beat Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State fumbled the ball seemingly for the fun of it in the red zone, but the Baylor Bears are undefeated. They're ranked, and they're going to be moving up into the top 10 if they keep winning. They'll probably be undefeated by the end of October when they go to Texas. Aggies and the Hogs at Jerry World. The Hogs, you blew it again. They had a chance to win that game. They just let A&M stick around, and A&M ended up pulling away at the end. But Arkansas had a chance to, you know, they just fumbled the ball inside of the red zone continuously. West Virginia beats BYU. They are 3-0. They are not ranked in any polls that came out today. Disrespect for the Mountaineers. That should sit very pretty well with them. Guys, what did you think seeing those games or anything else around the national scene before we get to LSU that caught your eye about some big things that happened in college football this weekend?
Yeah, honestly, I was shocked with Oklahoma State. I thought they were going to come out and win that game by 10, 14 points. I really thought they were going to be the better team. And so that shocked me. And I would just like to point out that I want to say it was about 3 weeks ago when everybody, not y'all too, but everybody was high on Texas for beating Notre Dame. And it comes out and Notre Dame loses to freaking Duke. And it just cracks me up that win, really now going back and looking at it, is not that great. And they carried Charlie Strong off the field after beating a shitty Notre Dame team. And that makes me laugh so bad.
The Texas hype machine was like in fourth gear, ready to go to fifth gear. I mean, they were so ready for that.
And I remember saying on the podcast, like, let's talk in a month after they play Cal and Oklahoma and all that. And it's just they obviously lost to Cal, and then freaking Notre Dame goes down on Duke. That's just, I love every minute of that.
I will tell you, Trey, I got more comments about your comment about how all the gas stations along I-35 are sold out of knockoff Texas Longhorn hats after that Notre Dame game. That was a home run comment. I heard more feedback about that than anything else all year.
It still killed me.
They're all at Goodwill now, though, so don't worry.
It still killed me that the second that game was over, there's old Joe T, that Texas is back, folks. You know, they were so ready for that at ESPN. Gotta hate them.
Oh, they were so excited about it. I don't like that because ESPN was so excited to do it. I don't like it because ESPN was so excited to just do anything to make their investment in the Longhorn Network look sharp. I'm not like Baylor conspiracy theory here, but they were desperate for this thing to work, and they beat a really bad Notre Dame team, and Charlie Strong got carried off the field. That seems to be where they're at.
And not in Big 12 conference, but that Florida-Tennessee game was really fun to watch, especially once Tennessee got it rolling and made their comeback, and that stadium was rocking. And the ending. I know we'll get into Les Miles, but the ending of that LSU game, man, I thought that he pulled one out of his hat again. That was nuts.
The other game I wrote down that I wanted to mention is Georgia is bad. That team is bad. And so they got hammered. They got hammered by Ole Miss. And my hope is that Georgia goes like 7-5. And Mark Richt goes 11-1 and wins the ACC at Miami because they fired a really good coach. He might have taken them as far as they could, but they thought they upgraded. They did not. They got a long way to go. So I really enjoyed seeing Kirby Smart get beat. So
I think it's funny. Just it's like an annual tradition. You see Georgia ranked really high in the preseason. They come out and they suck ass, and then everyone talks about it like, oh man, they're so bad. Well, they were never good. That's the problem. So, I don't know. It's just something funny because you can always, you know, just you can put money on. Like, all right, here comes Georgia. They're going to probably be ranked ninth this year. And then, of course, they end up just losing like six games.
It's so true. And it's just like I would hate to be a Georgia fan because every year, you know, they're like, all right, this is our year, preseason top 10, top 15. And they just – it's every single year. You're so right. It's every single year they're ranked high, and they just Georgia it up, just like
it's a rite of passage.
Kill it.
Well, the crazy thing is, all right, so you got Texas that has all this talent, but you also have five Power Five schools in the state, and then everybody else and their cousin wants to recruit out of the state of Texas. Georgia has all of this talent. It has Atlanta. I know South Georgia has a lot of talent along the border with Florida. And they've got Georgia and Georgia Tech. And that's it. Now, I know everybody else wants to reach in there and recruit from the ACC and the SEC. But they should be able to get 25 kids of the top 50 in Georgia every year in their recruiting class and just blow the doors off of everybody. And they can't do it. They just can't do it. There's no Texas team that gets the 25 of the top 50 Texas kids. If they did, they'd win the national title every year. Georgia, they can't do it. It's what they do every single year. Well, speaking of every single year, Les Miles got fired. Trey, you mentioned the game. Walk us through what you saw watching that. What was your takeaway in watching what you thought was the Mad Hatter pulling one more out and leading us all the way up to Les Miles getting canned today? Because basically the center didn't snap the ball fast enough, so now the boosters have to pony up $18 million.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously it started off disappointing, losing to Wisconsin, which I think a lot of people saw as a shocker at the time. I did. But it kind of turns out that Wisconsin seems to be fairly decent this year, so maybe it's not that bad of a loss. And then, you know, they lose on a, you know, crazy ending to Auburn. And, you know, I was flipping back and forth all day yesterday. I hate Friday night games, but the great thing about it is you can just sit at home on Saturday and take in all the action that you want. And so, you know, I was flipping
and not freak
back
out.
And yeah, it was so great. And those afternoon games turned out to be really good. And so, you know, I'm going back and forth and, you know, I flip over for the ending. And, you know, LSU's going down. And they got a penalty for – I don't even remember what – false start or what was it? Legal formation or something. I don't remember what the penalty was. And then they got set with 1 second left on the clock, and they weren't able to snap it, get it off in time, but they didn't stop the play. It went on. LSU ended up getting a crazy reception in the end zone. The guy got his foot down barely, and you know, LSU's just going freaking crazy. Then they reviewed it and obviously showed that they didn't get it off in time, and so you know, LSU loses another one. And I, honestly, when you texted me today and said that they fired him, I was a little surprised. I mean, I guess not for LSU. They were thinking about doing it last year. And, you know, I saw things today that said they just wanted to go ahead and do it because they didn't want him to, you know, win out or, you know, only lose one more game and kind of get back in everybody's good graces, and then them ended up having to keep him for another year. So they just went ahead and did it. But I'm a little shocked. I mean, I guess I could see where you'd be frustrated with him as a coach, but I don't know. Like, it's more like I feel like a little like sad. I mean, I'm sure Les Miles is going to get another job, but that dude just is entertaining to me. And it's like, I don't know, fun to watch him coach. And it's just like, I don't know. It's just going to be, it's going to be weird to watch LSU and not see him on the sideline.
I'd rather watch his antics than this bull crap that Harbaugh tries to pull off.
Oh yeah. Me too.
Yeah. Miles is genuine. He's human. He's real. You know, he's got a weird flat top. He likes to eat the AstroTurf. He, you know, goes for two at the weird time. I just, everything about Miles is fun. He won a national championship. He should have won another national championship in 2011. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Les Miles. And I know in the grand scheme of things, it's not all that important. But my gosh, I do feel bad for him because all he did was win. And he lost three games last year and they wanted to fire him. That's freaking ridiculous. That's really ridiculous. And what's even more ridiculous is that Charlie Strong is probably going to go 7-5 and keep his job this year. And so Les Miles is going to get fired, and Charlie Strong is going to keep his job. And that says everything about the difference between the LSU job and the Texas job, in my opinion. So, yeah. Well, one of the things that everybody and their cousin is going to be talking about is who's going to go to LSU. This is one of the best jobs in the country. LSU produces more NFL players per capita than any state in the union. It's the only Power 5 school in the state. They can basically draft 30 or 25 of the top 30 kids in the state of Louisiana to come there every single year. And that's a job that's just begging to be a powerhouse. Of course, everybody's going to mention Tom Herman. But the other name that's already floating around, and if it's on Twitter, it's got to be true, Art Briles. We're going to talk about whether he'll get the job or not in a second. But, Daniel, just like, what is your guttural response hearing that Art Briles is going to be a candidate for probably one of the top 5 or 10 jobs in the country?
I don't want to see him anywhere ever again. To think what he could do at LSU, because you have all of Baylor staff and everybody behind their football team. You have the entire city of Waco, including their police department, behind that football team, willing to do whatever. In Louisiana, you have the entire state behind LSU. So, yeah, there's no telling. They've been doing that kind of crap forever anyway. And they're going to cover up whatever they got to do and let Briles do whatever he wants to do. And he's going to have, or could have, more recruits from, you know, the best recruits ever. And I think it'd be insane if he went there. Now, I don't want that to happen. I don't quite think it will. I think they're probably going to look maybe a little more long-term, like get Tom Herman, because Briles is 61, so he doesn't have a ton left unless he wants to pull a Bill Snyder and coach forever. But that's my take.
Trey, walk me through why in the world Art Briles could even get another Power 5 job, let alone another job as an employee of a public university that are the flagship schools of these states. Could Art Briles actually get a job like this?
I mean, I think he can. You know, he's already, like you said, mentioned for this job. There's been other, you know, rumors or conversations about Auburn if that happens to open up. But, I mean, you just have to look at, one, his track record at Baylor, you know, what he's been able to do there, turn them into a winner. Like Daniel said, he's going to be in the SEC. He's going to be, you know, in a big southern state where I think that, you know, football's king and they, you know, just want to win games. And I think that if that Pepper Hamilton report doesn't ever see the light of day and, you know, nothing else more incriminating comes up, which is a stretch to say because it seems like every day Baylor figures out some way to stick their foot in their mouth. But, you know, his track record, they're in the SEC. And, you know, these teams want to win. And, you know, everybody, you know, kind of sees what Briles did with, you know, these cover-ups or whatever you want to call it. To a regular person, it seems pretty obvious, but I don't know. It just – I'm of the – I just – I don't know. I came out of this thinking that dude would never get a college head coaching job again just because you can't put him in charge of your, you know, your team like that, your program, but he's probably going to get a job. I mean, I just I don't see how, but apparently he probably will, I guess.
Let me read this quote to you. Art Briles has been the object of a grave injustice, quote, Ken Starr. We already have Ken Starr basically going to bat for Briles, so I'm unfortunately with you, Trey. I think it could happen. And I mean, look at
you would think nobody would want that guy near their team or program at all, and he's showing up at NFL training camps. Hell, he's at the Cowboy game as we speak right now. I mean, there's people obviously willing to look past it, so I guess they're willing to give him a coaching job.
Yeah, I figured he was going to have access to maybe like a Gang of Five, like a low-level Division One job that he could go to Texas State, or he could go to, you know, UAB or something of that ilk, go to Troy, go to Middle Tennessee State. But no, if they're already pining to get him at LSU, they're going to get him. Now, somebody smart is going to step in and say, you have a legal case against you, which he still does. If that is if that settlement is not addressed, then perhaps he won't get a job. But then it's just a matter of time. Then it's 2017 and not 2016. So we'll all find out.
It looks like he is going to get a job. But for the record, I don't think that LSU is going to hire him. I think they might interview him. They might consider him a serious candidate. But I don't think LSU is going to hire him.
Okay.
I think Auburn would.
Oh, yeah, I think Auburn would too.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, and, I think Auburn would.
Well, and I was saying earlier, it's like, well, what if they had gotten that off on time? Would we be that play at the end of the game? Would we be talking about Gus Malzahn about this, and Art Briles going to Auburn? It's because they're both on the hot seat, and then LSU loses, has to pull the trigger on Miles. So anyway, it's just kind of a interesting idea.
And if he does get a job after Thanksgiving, then he's just going to bring on Jared Stidham off the free agent market to come with him. I mean, it's just all going to line up. The whole staff is going to – it's just – you know, it's either – you're right. It would have been Auburn if they had gotten that snap off. But instead, it's LSU. So, as they say, we will see. Well, one of the other things that we got that I'm pretty darn excited about – I know this game doesn't have the star power that we all thought it was going to have a month ago. But this Saturday, 4 o'clock, Fox, TCU, Oklahoma. The Sooners are coming to town. It is always a big game, whether we are good or bad. We have always played well against Oklahoma. Last time we played them in Fort Worth in 2014, of course, Paul Dawson had the pick six that wrapped that game up. It was an exciting game. It came all the way down to the last play. Trevor Knight throwing it out the back of the end zone on the last play as the time expired. The Sooners are 1-2. Now, I think most people would be 1-2 if they played Houston and Ohio State. So I don't want to dog on them too much, but at the same time, I felt like they got exposed in multiple fronts. Trey, walk us through what you see in terms of the Frogs and the Sooners matching up this Saturday at Amon Carter.
Honestly, you could tell me that TCU is going to come out and win this game by 20 points, and I would be like, yeah, okay, that wouldn't surprise me. And you could also come up to me and say, yeah, TCU's probably going to lose this game by about 25 points. And I'd be like, yeah, that sounds about right. That doesn't surprise me. So this game to me is a big toss-up. And if TCU can come out and play two complete full halves, I think they have a really good shot of winning this game. If they come out flat in the first two quarters again, I think OU's going to roll. I'm a little concerned about the TCU run defense. I think Oklahoma is really going to try to pound them with P. Ryan and the girl beater. But, you know, obviously you have to always be concerned about the secondary as well. So the one thing, though, that is the Frogs have going for him is that Baker Mayfield's playing quarterback for OU. He's just not, to me, been that great this year.
He's feeding on your hate right now.
Yeah, he's that chip on his shoulders growing by the moment. And it's just, I think he's erratic at time. And if the Frogs can continue to get a little bit of pressure on the quarterback, they can, you know, cause him to make some mistakes. So, the one thing, you know, I do think Oklahoma is going to come in here. If say they do lose to TCU, I could see their season slowly, you know, slip away, but they still can come out and win the Big 12. And hell, you never know what's going to happen at the end of the year. There could be a lot of teams with two losses and, you know, nobody else's two losses are going to stack up to theirs. So, you know, if they run the table, who knows what's going to happen. So they still have a lot to play for. And I think they're going to come in motivated. They're going to be ready. Like you said, TCU always plays Oklahoma fairly tough. And I think it's going to be a great game. I think it's going to be a close game, but I really don't know who's going to win this one. It just depends on if the Frogs can put a full game together. Like, if they can finally do that, I think they're in a good position.
Yeah, I like what you said about how the best chance that we have is that Baker Mayfield is playing quarterback, because he is so hot and he is so cold. That Baylor game last year, I mean, that was a Heisman Trophy worthy game. And then some of these other games, he just looks so lost and looks like he's trying to score 21 points on one play. And so we can't control what kind of quarterback Baker Mayfield's going to be this Saturday, but I have a feeling Patterson is dialing up some pressure to be able to get inside of his head. And all the jokes aside about how we didn't offer him and all that kind of stuff, when the kid is on, he's on. But when he's off, it's the dark side, it's the shadow side of that grudge that he clearly continues to hold. And if Patterson is smart enough and the defense is smart enough to figure out how to exploit that, I think we can be in good shape, because I do think we can run the ball against Oklahoma, and I think we can throw the ball against Oklahoma. We just got to be able to shut down that run game, like you said. And if we can at least, you know, do that in a way that's competitive, I feel good about our chances this Saturday. Daniel, what do you think about taking on the Sooners this weekend?
Well, if you'd asked me that at halftime during this most previous game, I would have said it's just forfeit, we're done. But I'm a lot more hopeful after seeing the second half of that game, and it feels like things are, you know, kind of coming together. I don't feel like SMU is all that bad. I mean, they generally are, but it seems to be improving, so I feel better about the team and even some of the secondary. A lot of guys were stepping up. There's a lot of positives to take out of that game. So going into Oklahoma, I feel like exactly what Trey said. You could go either way. What really scares me is just getting torched and looking stupid in the secondary. But I think running it will be, you know, I think we'll do fine on that. You line Summers up in there against like P. Ryan, or is he still there? Mixon. And I think we'll hold our own. I think it'll be okay. How it's going to turn out, I really don't know because, like you said, Mayfield can be hot or cold. And if we have a first half like we've been having, probably not going to win that one.
Yeah. Well, I guess my word of encouragement to all the Frog fans listening to this is, as if you needed me to tell you, get out there to the game this Saturday against Oklahoma because it's our last home game for a month, and we have Oklahoma, and then we're at Kansas. We get a week off, and then we're at West Virginia, and then we come home on October 29th to take on Texas Tech, and then we're not home again until November 19th. So we got a couple of more. This is the biggest home game we're going to have this season. So I sure hope that the Frogs fans are getting out there to support the team. We need a sellout. We need everybody there. We need folks being loud early to the game. And hopefully we can at least create a good home field advantage because Oklahoma is going to bring some fans. They're going to bring their band. They're going to bring all the T-shirt fans down from Ardmore who have been hanging out at Walmart. They're going to be there. So let's get out there. And I think we are going to be competitive. That's the best I can say is I'm not going to predict that we're going to lose. And I'm sure not going to predict that we're going to win. But I think we're going to see what we've seen the last 4 years since we've been in the Big 12. It's a bar fight every time TCU and Oklahoma plays. Even in 2013 when we were so bad, when we didn't have one first down in the entire first half, that was a good game. And I think we're going to see another good game this Saturday at Amon Carter Stadium. Well, fellas, as always, this is a lot of fun. Anything else you guys want to say before we wrap up and leave everybody this week? Anything else on your mind?
Rest in peace, Arnold Palmer.
Oh, yep. Yeah. I just got that on my phone. That sucks. Yeah. People keep dying. Mortality rate's still hovering around 100% last I checked. So
yeah. That
sucks. That sucks.
What about Michigan State?
Oh, they got curb stomped by Wisconsin.
That was kind of a surprise. Wisconsin, I feel, is probably pretty good this year, but I never expected that against Michigan State at home.
No, I didn't either. I'm wondering if they've kind of run their course with that run that they had. They kind of started against us in 2012 in the Buffalo Wild Wings Chick-fil-A West Coast Bowl or whatever the hell that was. Yeah, they might be coming down a little bit, so I'll be curious about that. You know what game I was really glad happened? I was so glad that Colorado beat Oregon. I didn't get to watch it because I don't have the back. I don't have the Pac-12 network, and nobody does. But I was so glad to see that Colorado beat Oregon because I think Alford is on the hot seat. I think he's going to get fired. So
they deserve to lose for those freaking uniforms they had.
Oh, those are atrocious.
I liked them. I thought they were cool.
They look like vomit colored Magic Marble.
I know. That was this funny part. They actually looked like ducks. That was funny to me.
Not too bad. They weren't atrocious. They were ugly, but I've seen worse. I've seen worse. So, well, as always, we want to remind you to find us on iTunes. If you can go on there and give us a rating, we would appreciate that. You can also find us on Facebook at the Frogcast, on Twitter at the Frogcast TCU, as well as thefrogcast.com. If you ever don't quite know how to pick up our podcast, just go to killerfrogs.com. You'll find a thread on there every Monday that we post that. We're a proud member of the Killer Frogs family. As always, we'd love for you to give us some feedback. We enjoy this show, and we hope you enjoy it too. So for my friend, Angry Trey Fallon, and for Daniel Southern, I am Jeff Mitchell. Thank you for listening to the Frogcast.